It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Lori, they're all in the house. We're going to talk about jailbreaking, a jailbreak that works on all iPhones. Why Renee says the next iPhone will not have a USB-C port, but what it will have next year is pretty exciting. And the Mythic Quest Apple TV Plus shot entirely on iPhone. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 715, recorded Tuesday, May 26th, 2020, Smoking These Meats. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by CashFly. Literally, give your users the seamless online experience they want. Power your site or app with CashFly's CDN and be 30% faster than the competition. Learn more at twit.cashfly.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Macintosh news from Apple. Actually, I shouldn't say Mac news because it's just as often iOS and services news. Alex Lindsay has the week off. Renee Ritchie's here from Renee Ritchie.
The YouTube channel. By me.
Hey, you know, Joe Rogan just sold his YouTube channel to Spotify for $100 million. You could probably do the same. I'm just saying.
No, I still want audience, Leo. I still want audience. I'd actually like to know. It was snowing here last week, and now it's 90 degrees. I don't know anymore.
It's the new
spring
normal.
Never sprung.
It's the new normal. That's just the way life is.
Two seasons, winter and summer. That's
Boom.
All you get.
That is pretty sudden. That's a pretty sudden jump. Lori Gill's also in the very hot Sacramento area. She is a managing editor for iMore. Hello, Lori.
How's it going? I heard you talking earlier today about your love of the iPhone SE. So I'm on the same page as you. I've been using the SE for a month now, I guess, and I definitely love it.
It's made for people wearing masks.
Yeah.
Oh, we thought Touch ID was so old fashioned. No,
turns out,
it's a pretty good idea.
Just don't wear gloves.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you can't. Yeah, there's always something. That's why you should have both, honestly.
Yeah, you should have three. You should have voice and you should have gait analysis. And then it should just do the work for you.
I know
no
it's
human
you.
Should have to decide.
I know it's you, yes. Renee. I know. Andy Anatko's also here. I don't know what his gait's like, but we know it's him from the sideburns, ihnatko.com. Hello, Andrew.
Sure. Hello, gee, I bet you Apple people would love to have something like the Pixel 4 phone from Google, whose magical Soli radar chip allows you to interact with the interface without touching the screen at all, rendering gloves absolutely inconsequential. And I bet owners of the Pixel 4 wish that feature did anything more than let you skip tracks and pause audio.
Nothing's happening. Actually, I heard a rumor they're dumping it, which is even funnier.
I'm so angry and so depressed with the Pixel right now.
I think that when Google wished upon the monkey's paw and said, we want to be like Samsung, they should have been more specific.
Yeah.
In terms of units sold, as opposed to having half-baked features that don't really do anything.
The last I heard, the CFO really, really wants an iPhone to have a tertiary revenue stream. The development team wants a phone that's easy for everyone to buy so that they can test their stuff against it. And the product team wants to have a place where they can dog food all of the stuff that Google's working on. And none of these groups talk to each other. And so Rick Ostwell is like, what phone did you make me? And they're like, we don't know. Weren't you in charge?
That's something that... This is why Apple and Google are really good companies to have, like, facing off each other, because we have one company to judge another one against. Like, can you imagine at Apple, like, the head of the hardware division calling everybody in the iPhone division together saying, I'm very disappointed with the battery life of the new phone
could
that we're going to be launching
Jaws
in 2 months?
That?
And like, well, sir, does that mean that you didn't know about it until this morning, or that you just let it go like that because you really wanted to have this big macho, ooh, I'm really disappointed in you dad moment? Like, no, fix it. As a person who's wanted to buy this phone, fix the problem.
Well, You can jailbreak it now. How about that?
Every iPhone, right?
Do people jailbreak their phones anymore?
The truth is, I saw this story and I didn't. This is the only place I brought it up because it's like, who cares?
People iPadify, like they want to take the Instagram app or they want to take the iPad only stuff like Playgrounds and run it on their iPads, or take like the iPhone only stuff like Instagram and run it on their iPads. And so there's like very niche nerdy little things that you can still do, but I'm not convinced any of them are worth the effort anymore.
I think the hacker community in general gets the joy of jailbreaking, but outside of that, just the average everyday people, that's where I think it's kind of just a fun thing to do now instead of it being almost a necessity like it used to be for some people.
Like dark mode is done. We got dark mode. We're fine.
It's downloadable if you want from GitHub, from Pwn to Own Stuff. It's the Uncover 5.0.0. It will let you jailbreak any iPhone running iOS 11 all the way up to the most recent version of iOS 13.5. Who cares? I don't care. It's a dumb thing to do. I understand, but don't do it. Why would you do it? I understand. You gave some reasons, but if you want to do that kind of stuff, buy a Pixel. Buy something else. Don't buy an iPhone.
But still, it is significant for the rest of us because Apple doesn't have an unlocked bootloader. It doesn't say, please, we invite you to customize. It means that people who wanted a new exciting version of a new flashlight and fart app found weaknesses in the security of the phone, which means that other people probably found those same weaknesses in the security of the phone as well. So
I just feel like you shouldn't buy an iPhone to customize it. That's expecting to customize it. I mean, you're right. It's your phone. You should be able to do whatever the hell you want with it, and I'm glad you can. But really, people buy iPhones. In my mind, you should buy an iPhone because you like the way Apple says to do things, and you should just do it that way.
I have this theory that people go to the store, and if they don't know anything about phones, they don't care anything about phones, they just want to be able to use Facebook, they get whatever phone is $0 on their carrier, and it's usually an Android phone that's heavily subsidized, or like the sales rep has a promotion for getting rid of it, they're fine. Other people are like nervous, and they've heard Apple phones are easier to use, so they come in asking for an iPhone. Then at a certain point, they get bored. They're like, there's a grid of icons, there's this. I just want to make my phone my phone. So they get an Android phone, often a Samsung phone. They change the font to Comic Sans. They do whatever they want with it, and they're fine. But then at a certain point, they're like, it's taking so much time to customize, and I've got to reset it, and it's not working, and it's getting old. And look, I'm tired of working for my phone. I just want a phone that I can't do anything with, so all I can do is make that phone work, and they go back to an iPhone. So
you invented the circle of iPhone is what you've done.
Yes.
The circle of iPhone.
I went through this, Leo.
I was going to cite a different Broadway theme. Okay. So basically, you're taking the George the third approach. You'll be back soon. You'll see. You'll remember. You'll buy a brand new iPhone.
You go back and forth, right? It's like sometimes you buy your furniture, sometimes you make your furniture. It depends on your mood. And we're lucky we have the choice to go with what we want at the moment.
The problem is that people want a choice with the iPhone, which is fine, I guess. And you can jailbreak it. It's just
then you
it
pay
makes
the choice
everything
tax.
So janky. Yeah, you just it's such a
all the screenshots on Twitter are suddenly Comic Sans, and just think of the rest of us.
Maybe the new super low cost 2020 iPhone SE is going to make it easier or make it something that jailbreakers want. Because they can have their really expensive, $1,000 iPhone that they don't jailbreak, plus their $400 iPhone SE that they can just play around with. Right. I would consider it just for fun if I had that desire, for sure.
When I was going up to Canada to do Call for Help with Amber MacArthur, and the first iPhone came out in 2007. I bought one for her. You couldn't run it because it was only on AT&T. You couldn't run
Me
it
too.
In Canada. I jailbroke it and gave it to her. She never used it, probably because it was janky, right? It was
and
funky.
Remember the jailbreak was a TIFF. Like you opened a TIFF or something in the browser and the whole phone was jailbroken.
It was a mess.
Yeah, it's a really cool part. Jailbreaking is a really cool part of the history of the iPhone because we forget how much of our pleasure of using an iPhone was based on agreeing to wait on basic features that have been out for years.
Right.
Like, again,
like cut and paste.
App pastes, tethering, exactly, apps, just basic things that were like, I wish I had in my BlackBerry was the ability to tether, the ability to do that. And on that basis, yes, heroic means are necessary so that you can continue to not have to use a BlackBerry or not have to use a Trio or something like that. I like Renee's idea that for everybody, that if you've been using like an iPhone for five or 10 years, it's, and you feel that you're legitimately intrigued by Android or the vice versa. Like I've now been on Android since like 2013, 2014. And now I'm legitimately intrigued about, my daily driver phone is a Pixel 1. It is now at end of life. It's not going to get any more security updates. So this is the year that I really kind of need to replace it. And there's a really good chance I'll buy an iPhone, not necessarily because anything has disgusted me about Google or its Pixel phones, but that I've been with this for 7 years now. The two platforms are really, really similar at this point, and it would be kind of fun to be back on the iPhone platform for the next 2 or 3 years of using a phone. I think that if you're not excited enough to try to walk on the other side of the street for a while, you kind of lost your lust for technology.
I should mention that a jailbreak on an iPhone is not the same thing as rooting on Android. The only thing a jailbreak does on the iPhone is let you use third-party stores. That's all.
It breaks the root jail, basically.
But on an Android phone, there's a setting for that.
Yeah.
In order to get it to maybe run a third-party software, ROM, and so that you have a completely different phone or you get updates or whatever you want to do, you can, in some, not all, you can root them, which means you can completely replace the firmware.
Yeah. Get on the elevator, you flash it, you come out with a completely different ROM.
Yeah, so it's a very different thing from jailbreaking. Jailbreaking is kind of a trivial, simple thing. The only reason I don't recommend it is because those third-party stores, God only knows what's in there.
Yeah. Well, the other reason, I mean, one of the reasons why I own this phone, I should be able to do what I want with this phone. A lot of that comes down to I should be able to download commercial apps I don't have to pay for from Siberian repositories
If I could jailbreak an iPhone and put a headphone jack on it, that'd be a different matter.
That's a hardware break. Well, the guy engine did that. Remember, he's got a a soldering iron.
Okay,
That was epic.
Probably janky as well.
Higher level skill.
That channel alone. Every time there's an argument about right to repair, saying, "Well, the thing is, like, there's nothing that a user can do that an Apple store can't do better." Saying, "Yeah, but you realize that you've got this guy that used to live like actually in like cell phone city," and said, "Gee, I wonder if there's a way I could put a headphone jack on an iPhone." You just keeps going back and forth to like the stores, to the hacker malls. And now he's got a headphone jack on the same
iPhone. I want a waffle iron on a Pixel. Keep going. That's a great channel. Keep going.
I'll match you one for one. If there's a Kickstarter where I can buy a fully breadboarded phone, just nothing but like wire connectors.
I think such things exist. I mean, does Purism and others, don't they make phones that are pretty like you could just get in there and do anything you want with them?
Yeah, Raspberry Pi platform, you can buy like a 3G module for it.
Yeah.
And there are plans to here's how to build a phone completely from scratch. And I love that idea. However, by the time it's finished, it's about the size of a carton of milk. And I'm not sure that I'm ready to be that flashy about my nerddom.
I just feel like the iPhone is kind of a perfect, elegant thing, and it's just
it's a mainstream phone. It really is a mainstream smartphone.
Well, increasingly, and I like Android, and you see I have a Pixel 4, but increasingly I'm just thinking, maybe I'm at that end of the cycle that you went through, Renee, where I just feel like it's more secure. The iPhone's more secure. The iPhone, yes, I wish it had some other,
I had the Palms and the Windows Mobiles, and I was forever tweaking them and customizing them and going, why does one on this carrier have Wi-Fi and one on this carrier has 3G? Mm. And it was a wild west of phones. And now...
You know what? I think that Apple could, in terms of all the things that I really like customizing my Android phone about, Apple could totally obliterate that whole advantage in my mind by simply giving us a much better launcher.
Yeah.
Not just that, but how about the ability to create my own widgets and shortcuts and put them anywhere I want to amongst those icons?
Or allow third-party launchers as Android does.
Because that is the most wonderful. That's the most wonderful thing.
Attacks.
Yeah. Okay. That's
the what
okay.
Tax? What are they worried about?
They're worried about I think what Andy's talking about is something that they'll move to, where you can basically create any shortcut or create any widget or put anything in any arbitrary place. I think they're worried about seeding for two reasons: seeding new launchers, because there would be a Google and a Facebook launcher like that, and that's one of their worries.
But if also people that there want would be that, launchers they should be able to get that. Why?
Well, no, yes. Absolutely. But also that there would be launchers that just do it in a way. Because the first thing the Facebook launcher would do is measure every app that you launch ever, so that they could figure out which ones to buy, and then they're all the way back at their VPN circle again.
Right. By the way, there's a guy in the chat room who's very sophisticated. He says if you have Xcode and you have the source code, you can install arbitrary apps using Xcode.
Yeah, that's true.
Legally and legitimately. And that might be, for somebody who's sufficiently technically skilled, a safer and preferable way to do it. Let me ask, I don't know, maybe Gardner could respond, or guys, but do you have to use test flight, or how do you install apps from Xcode directly on there?
Flight is for other people. For test flight, you can just tether your phone and push them over. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you'd have to self-sign them, but that's not a big deal.
Yeah, and the phone wouldn't barf. Did you say okay?
No, there's stuff now. There's a bunch of utilities that you just download off GitHub and build them in Xcode, self sign them, push them over.
That. Mm-hmm. But see, that's a perfect example. I could do that. I have Xcode. I know how to do that. I code, but I don't want to. It's like I'm fine.
And it's a good barrier to entry for people who shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah,
but also on the other hand, it's nice to bootstrap people into taking more control and learning more things. When the first thing you do is something that is, you're just following instructables that you found someplace, and then you realize, well, how do I? That's nice. Wonder how I can do this, and then you sort of get a little bit into the deeper ends of the pool. But as I'm talking about this, though, I do have to acknowledge that this is the difference between stuff that I think is important, because sometimes I have a fatherly approach, thinking that, well, son, I could help you to fix that bike, but I think it's time for you to learn how to upgrade that bike yourself. And it's not something that most people want, I agree. And I would love it if the iPhone were a platform that could do that could represent everything that I want a phone to be, but that's not practical either. Like Renee said, let's keep piggybacking on Renee. One of the things that is also sort of tempting me about the iPhone is that it really is just a beautiful, elegant device. Pixels, I think, are designed at that level as well, but it really isn't targeted towards people who really want to customize their experience and give themselves something that works a little bit better for them. They really want something where they take it out of the box, they charge it, they answer what language that they use, and then they're taking great pictures and posting them to Instagram. And I have to say that I'm very, very tempted this year to upgrade to the iPhone 12. And part of it is that it's like, Pixel, I understand that you're I believe in you. I think you got a great plan. Mm-hmm. I think that you're going through a rebuilding year, just like any successful pro team has a rebuilding year where they're saying, you know what, we're gonna get our relief pitching in order, we're gonna figure out what our training regimen is going wrong. I'll be back in a couple of years. but maybe it's time for me to switch back to the iPhone for a few years.
I had the opposite reaction. So I saw that everything with Mark being fired or leaving. He was the head of Pixel Camera, for people who don't know.
Yeah,
that was probably the biggest strength that Google had. And just
can I interrupt and say he is the inventor of night vision and computation. Yeah. Some of the most fun I've ever had was with when he was the head of a professor at Stanford. He released a app, I think it was called Multicam, for the iPhone 3. And I just remember putting my iPhone on a tripod and taking these pictures of of a statue in the public garden in Boston and seeing how it was differentiating between the things that were permanently there and things were coming and going. So that's why it's a really big deal that they lost this super visionary sort of guy. There's still lots of great engineers there in the photo division, of course. But when you say that it's his ideas that created night vision, which was a signature feature, his ideas that super created that made HDR Plus, right, super red zoom, that's scary. So I'm sorry.
The thing for me is and then Osterloh's like, I didn't know the battery was bad. I'm just like, I bought almost every Nexus. I bought almost every Pixel. I think I bought every Pixel. And I am probably not going to. And now the next one is delayed, and who knows how long. It might be delayed so much that the 4A comes out when the fight. And I'm taking a Pixel pause. I hope that they can get their act together. I think their vice president, their head of product, and their head of engineering really need to get in the same room and decide they're making one phone and not three phones that they make a horrible hybrid in at the last minute. But I might actually go for like a Samsung Fold 2 or Flip 2 this year instead, because not that they're making more interesting things. I still like Google's software way better. But if the Pixel continues to be shenaniganized like this, I might try something different this year.
That will consistently be a signature advantage of the Android platform. Maybe a foldable phone is not for everybody, but for the people who really want one, here are three different kinds to choose from, or here is a 7.5-inch phone, all these different weird aspect ratios, these different weird form factors, even things that are small enough that you could put inside like a cosmetic case.
Because I'll have an iPhone, so if Joanna Stern puts a hot dog in my fold, it won't stop me for long. Like, I'll be fine.
Show title. Joanna Stern, put a hot dog
in my Galaxy Fold.
I like the idea of having a technical barrier, but letting people do things if they can surmount that technical barrier. A good example is with Gatekeeper. They're slowly making it more and more just, you can't install anything that's not notarized by Apple, that's not from the Apple store. But what they've left, and I hope they keep leaving it, in fact, I got it from iMore, is a command line you can enter that will give Gatekeeper that third permission again to install from third-party stores or third-party sources. And if you're sophisticated enough to know that command line and be able to use it, then you should be allowed to do that.
Yeah. My gripe is that they won't let Homebrew for 32. Like their loss of 32-bit apps is just so bad for the music industry and for the gaming industry that I really want them to say, like, we're not going to do 32-bit compatibility anymore. You want to download something from the open source community to do it. Like other platforms are doing, that's fine. But I think that was one step too far.
Is there a risk that Homebrew won't work on Mac someday?
Homebrew works. It's just 32-bit binaries. Like my godkids wanted to do Portal, the level builder, and it's still 32-bit, and they can't do it on the Mac. They have to boot camp and do it on Windows.
I'm a little bit more supportive of Apple on that. You kind of have – one of the things Apple's really good at, and in contrast to Microsoft, is leaving behind older technologies. And, it's tough because then you're killing legacy things like Portal – level builders.
Yeah, the developers are no longer around to make. It's not that they don't want to make updates. It's that literally the people who made them are no. But it was 10 years ago.
It does make an operating system better to eliminate this old cruft, I think.
I think just make it a hobbyist thing. Like make it a thing that the open source community. It's like what they did when they stopped including Perl and all the different scripts and all the different
Python
services.
And Perl.
Yeah,
they
don't do it anymore.
With Homebrew, by the way. But so you don't need to, Apple. And if somebody needs it, they have the skills to do it. I just like that. I like having a technical bar. That makes sense on the Mac. Would it make sense on an iOS device? Or is iOS really? It's really a walled garden. It's built to be that way.
Well, you have that Xcode thing. That's your barrier of entry.
I haven't played with that. I'm gonna have to try it. It is what makes the iPhone elegant, and it's one of the reasons I don't want to jailbreak it.
Before test flight, and this probably happened to Lori too. If there was developers who ran out of beta slots, they sometimes would just send you, say, hey, you got to build it and sign it. But here's how you're gonna beta test it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. By the way, 13.5 came out the day after MacBreak Weekly. Thanks. Thanks a bunch.
We were waiting.
And yes, the COVID tracking API is in there. No, you can't do anything with it. So I'll show you if you go into your settings and you go to privacy. Can you zoom in on that a little bit? I don't know if you can, John. Yeah, look at that. Look, he's got the amazing miracle zoom. You go to privacy and then you go down to health. There it is. if you've got 13.5 COVID-19 exposure logging, and it's off by default, except that you can't turn it on because you have to have an authorized exposure logging app on there.
Yeah.
Once you do, you can see what exposure checks there are, and you can delete the exposure log. And of course, this, it turns out, this is Apple's and Google, because they create the API for Android in conjunction with Apple's desire to keep it really private. There's no personal information connected. Your exposure log isn't sent to any authority saying, oh, Leo's got COVID-19. And for that reason, France, and it looks like most states, all but four states, are saying, yeah, we're not going to use that.
They want location. I listened to the briefing. They had a, sorry, mine just says not available in your region. We're the most afflicted place in Canada, not available in your region. But they had a an off the books briefing on that, and it was super interesting because they some of those places badly want location data, and Apple and Google are trying to explain to them, like it explained to me like I'm a 5-year-old version of why you don't need the location data. It is irrelevant. They know how to do Bluetooth. They know who you're around. There are still some problems, like you pass somebody in a subway and they're standing on the platform. There's no communication there, but you were still near them. So there's still like things that have to be addressed with this. But every bit of data that could be useful for what they're trying to do now, which is the notifications, is available to them. And there seems to be just a sticking point in the mentality, either ignorance because they don't know that they already have what they want, or nefariousness because they believe that this is their gateway into getting something that they've never been able to get.
I'm going to fight you on this.
Well, to be fair,
go ahead. I'll let you, Andy. But after that, I'll fight.
To be fair, health organizations have two schools of thought on this. They do acknowledge that a solution like Apple Google's is going to be a lot more palatable for the general public. And the only way to make this sort of app useful to the community is to get 60-80% of the people actually installing that and actually using it. But the argument for having a centralized approach is that with that huge pile of data, assuming that's only, even if it's only available to healthcare organizations, you can crunch that data and create brand new models that sort of anticipate how this is spreading, not just with people who have been diagnosed, but people who have not been diagnosed. A lot of this is community organized. Google released a really interesting tool just last month for community leaders to basically say, please don't dig deep into how we have this data, but here is how active people have been at your areas of public recreation, at shopping areas. Here's how much travel they've been doing within your town. Here's how much travel they've been doing outside your town and to other states. And that's the sort of data that can allow a community or even a local government to decide, you know what, we believe now that people are getting it. We believe that the correlation between the numbers that we're seeing in new diagnoses and confirmed cases are related to how well people are sheltering in place and following instructions. Therefore, we believe that we can ease our restrictions or create new rules. That's the argument that they're making. But I stick to my guns in saying that I don't want this sort of I believe that if we might have a Patriot Act situation if we allow governments to have access to routine, no warrant access to daily tracking, that at first it will be to solve this immediate problem that absolutely affects every single person in this country. And then it will be, well, you know what? We do have this power to do this. Why don't we just say that terrorism or murder or drugs are a health problem, and as such, we will simply take access to entire communities' information about how people are moving around to do our drug enforcement, and that would be almost impossible to roll back.
Lori, you have any thoughts?
Well, I guess what comes up for me is the way contact tracing has traditionally worked, which is that somebody contracts the virus, let's say it's COVID-19 in this case, and then there are healthcare workers who have to go out and physically go to all of those locations and tell, you know, the restaurant or the grocery store that somebody that had COVID-19 was in this store at this time, at this date, so that they can put their procedures in place. They have to call up each and every one of the people that person who contacted it came in contact with, that they know of, they know them personally and can get into contact with them. So I think what might be happening right now with this desire to have centralized data is that that's how they've done it in the past. And
it's
like Renee is saying,
the only way that works, but go ahead, and that's why I'll tell you. That's why I'll fight all three of you. I'll fight all three.
Well, so it's the it's the only way that you know of that works. And I'm not even disagreeing with this idea of centralized.
Period. And we know it. Now, Latvia is going to do this. There are some countries that are going to use the Google API. But I refer you to Bruce Schneier, who is no laggard on privacy, who says, my problem with contact tracing apps is they have absolutely no value. I'm not even talking about the privacy concerns. I'm meaning the efficacy. The countries that have successfully stopped COVID, with there's no vaccine, there's no known way to do it, there's no treatment in hospitals. The countries that have successfully done this have done it in one way and one way only, with effective tracing, testing and contact tracing. And that's human contact tracing. And the reason governments don't want to use what Apple's giving them is it's worthless. They could use as an adjunct for human contact tracing, which I will repeat, is the only effective way. It's what South Korea has done. It's what Taiwan did. It's what China has done. It's what the countries that are effectively reducing their cases to zero have to do. It's what we will have to do, except we never will do it because we're too liberty-focused.
Well, isn't there, like, you can make that, right? Like, anyone can make an app that asks for
location. You could have an app that would
help
human contact tracing, but you still need humans to go out, call people. And it's, you know what? It's really tough medicine. We'll never do it in the U.S. You might do it in Canada. You'll never do it in the U.S. because what it involves is I get tested positive. They say, tell me everywhere you've been in the last 14 days, every store, every restaurant, every person. They then go to all those places and people. They say, you now need to quarantine for 14 days. Plus, we want to know everyone you've talked to since you ran into Leo.
But isn't the issue that they miss people because you don't know who you've been in contact with?
That's
what the app is.
It doesn't have to be perfect. It has to reduce the R-naught. And it works. And it has worked in every nation that does it. It has
worked. So I'm confused. What's the difference then between this thing automatically reporting who you've been in contact with as opposed to you giving a verbal list?
Well, I'll again refer you to the Bruce Schneier article. He talks about false positives, false negatives. He talks about the idea that this is his final quote, that contact tracing can be done with an app and not human health professionals is just dumb. Now, I'm not as smart as Bruce Schneier. I'm not as smart as you guys. But if Schneier says it doesn't work, I believe him. And
it's just
I'll tell you,
thing,
the countries
though, right?
that are Singapore, where they've done a very good job, Hong Kong, where they did a very, very good job. Singapore, they had an app, 20% adoption rate. And it didn't matter because it was humans that made the difference. Now, an app could help humans, but that's why the governments want the information.
So here's what I'm confused, though. It's like the arguments I've heard about the app isn't that they don't think it's going to be useful. It's that they wanted complete location access to everybody, and Apple and Google said no, and they're angry about it. But if the app doesn't work, then it doesn't matter if it gives them location data or Bluetooth beacon data because they, you know, it's not useful anyway. So in the end, the government still or the government still just wants an excuse to get our location data. And at the least, Apple and Google are saying no.
Okay, so excuse to get a location, David, privacy, blah, 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 blah. I got it. Yeah. You have a choice. You can either stay in quarantine until a vaccine is developed, if ever, or you can have your privacy.
But would they get? Would the app work if they had location data? Like, because if he says the app, apps don't work, you need humans, then it's irrelevant.
No, it's
if they
the
get
same. It's a subway train issue. It's all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the apps could be useful, and this is why most governments, including all but four states in the United States, including California, are developing their own apps because an app could be useful in conjunction with human contact tracing.
Yeah.
But it's not by itself useful.
Yes.
And no matter what it does. And so you need humans, and the app could be an adjunct to humans. But the there's a lot of problems with an app anyway. And the Apple app is useless, completely useless.
Even with the government
I wouldn't say that.
It has to
be part of a complete breakfast is I think the point.
Every health expert says this, Andy. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to stand by this. There was a really good, if you watch CNN last night, Anderson Cooper interviewed, who's the guy who did the HIV stuff? He's really, really good. He wears the German jacket. But he was very clear and very adamant on this. You need human contact tracing.
So if the apps don't work anyway, I'm happy they're not getting my data while making them. That's a bottom line for me.
Leo, I'm not sure if we actually disagree. I absolutely agree with you that the need for human boots on the ground processing has been underestimated and underappreciated for this crisis. A lot of this is, Rhode Island got into a lot of trouble for doing something that was proactive and very, 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 very simple, which is to say, we know where the New Yorkers who own beach property, like vacation property in Rhode Island live. We know where the rental properties that attract most New Yorkers are. So therefore, we are going to like have people go out there and look for New York City license plates and then knock on a door to say, hi, are you from New York? Great. You do know that you have to quarantine. Who else you've been in contact with? That's the sort of stuff that we're going to need at a much, much higher scale. I agree with that. It would be useless if that's what we were counting on. I mean, this is going to be such a great.
Schneier says apps are techies doing techie things because they don't know what else to do. It is not useful.
I think we need every club in the bag that we can use.
Again, that's why everybody except four states and a handful of countries is doing something other than the Apple Google thing.
Yeah, well, it's and the other thing that we're overlooking is that we have to we can't have a solution that requires someone to have a phone of a certain vintage in order to run. A lot of people are using pay as you go phones on pay as you go plans. A lot of more people than we appreciate are using non smartphones. So a solution that requires people to have access to a modern-ish iPhone or a Android phone that can access the Google Play Store is not a great idea because it's not going to benefit some of the people who are most vulnerable, which are the people who don't have a whole lot of money and are very, very dependent on being able to don't have the ability to say no when an employer is saying, "Hey, we're reopening. No, we can't have masks. No, we're putting together a plan for disinfecting surfaces, but we don't have it together yet. But if you want to, you can. If you don't come in and start working, regardless, you will still lose your unemployment benefits. So you have no choice. So we have to make sure we have solutions that work for everybody."
You know, obviously, the notion of widespread testing and contact tracing is not going to ever happen in the United States. So the consequence of that is waves, many more people dying, waves of quarantine. We'll talk in a year. And nothing happens.
We can't even get people to wear masks, Leo.
I know. We can't even get them to wear masks. By the way, masks work, too, if everybody wears them. Yep. But I still see lots of people wearing and selling masks that have valves that allow you to your air to to go out, which is exactly the wrong kind of mask to wear. I mean, it's just, you could get political and say that leadership in this country has not been very good. That's part of it, but it's happening all over the world.
It's been terrible in Quebec. He's been changing his mind. We're reopening all the schools. Oh, no, they're getting sick again. Close the schools. We're opening the... people are getting sick again. Close them.
The places where it works is where the politicians step down and the health experts step up. Yes. And then that's who gives the briefings and that's who tells you what to do.
Or when you elect people based on things that involve leadership and managerial skill.
You look at New Zealand, excellent prime minister, but her real skill was letting the health experts decide what New Zealand does. Now, it's easy in an island nation, and we're a very large nation, spread the hell out all over the place. It's going to be very difficult. We also are founded on the notion of personal liberty. So there's no way.
But we all wear pants, Leo. We wear the thing with me is there's people going into stores yelling about their right not to wear a mask. They're wearing pants. They understand no shoes, no shirts. They were fine with that. But now we have YouTube and everyone wants to be. But it feels like dinosaurs were killed by a meteor from space and we're all going to die by a comet of our own stupidity. That's just how it feels to me.
Anyway, I just want. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
I absolutely hear you.
It's frustrating. Really important. Because I think when you focus on the Google Apple thing, we miss really a much broader point. And I think Bruce Schneier convinced me that this, the article's really good because he gives this scenario. He says, all right, fine. Assume you take the app grocery shopping with you and it alerts you of a contact. What should you do? It's not accurate enough for you to quarantine yourself for 2 weeks. And without ubiquitous, cheap, fast, and accurate testing, you can't confirm the diagnosis. So the alert's useless. Similarly, assume you take the app out grocery shopping and it doesn't alert you of any contact. Are you in the clear? Well, obviously not. You actually have no idea if you've been infected.
That's a huge problem that I've got. I saw a huge article yesterday about saying how airplanes are safe because airplanes are very low risk. They're very safe because they circulate and filter the air. But you could be sitting next to someone who's infected. You could be sneezed on by going down the aisle. None of this stuff is being reported very well.
Yeah. Here's an article from April 27th from the Brookings Institution. Contact tracing apps are not a solution. I mean, we can go on and on and on. I think the health experts have been very clear about this. I trust them. And, you know, when it comes to technology, I trust Bruce Schneier. I'm not as smart as any of them. But you have to know who to listen to.
And the other larger thing, just relating it back to technology, is that we have the people who create the technology have the greatest amount of faith in technology. They don't understand when the when a whole bunch of people who have the means to money is the fuel for change, and that the programs don't get off the ground until you have money to actually fund them. And when a whole bunch of people got together saying, how can we improve the lot of children? The idea was, ooh, let's find a way to make a $100 version of a $500 laptop. And that will help like children's education everywhere instead of having like the more practical thought of, well, how about we fund the creation of roads so that people can get from one place to another. Let's make sure that that teachers are funded let's make sure that we improve the living conditions of the families so that parents don't feel as though they can't afford to lose their child for several hours a day. One of the biggest problems we have ongoing, I'm talking about year to year to year, is the old adage that Silicon Valley is really, really good at solving problems that can be felt by a 20 to 30 year old engineer making $300,000 a year.
Renee, you broke my heart. Why the iPhone 12 still won't be going USB-C.
There was a rumor yesterday there was a prototype, but they decided against it.
Yeah, I saw that. Do you think that's credible that it's still going to be Lightning this year?
Yeah, I think that, it was a confluence of several things. One, that Apple was working on USB-C, but there was no way that they were going to get it standardized in time. And they wanted to make the iPhone 5, so they made Lightning, which had almost the same characteristics, just a few things Apple liked better than the USB committee. So we got that, and it just wasn't tenable 3 years later to switch to USB-C after so many people had gotten Lightning. And now it sounds like they're going to be moving to a smart connector because most of the stuff that they want to do, they can do wirelessly. And for things that still don't work wirelessly, like DFU mode or charging, when wireless charging is not available or it's just not fast enough, or anything you need to tether for can be handled now over a smart connector, which is a more robust, like there's less physical issues that can happen with it than can happen with the Lightning.
So that was the rumor yesterday, was forget USB-C this year, and in fact, forget it entirely until they can go out with completely connectionless devices.
Like on your iPad.
But you're saying they'll use the iPad smart connector. That actually makes sense. That helps with waterproof, right? Yep. It does give you a fast way to charge it or to reset it with DFU mode without having a hole in it.
The problem with Lightning and USB-C is that they are waterproof, but people plug into them right away and then it shorts because it's not electrically waterproof.
Right.
So you still have to be careful.
And the smart connector is magnetic. You would assume there would be a magnetic connector on this phone. So that's not like, so don't worry, if you need to charge your phone on the go, just simply set up a dock on the subway seat next to you and slide it in.
Yeah, what would that look like? How would you?
You'd have an adapter for now, especially for things like wired CarPlay, which people immediately freaked out about because cars do not change. Like people had dock connectors for 10 years after the iPhone went to Lightning.
Yeah, we have a Chevy Bolt that it's great. CarPlay works, but you have to plug in the Lightning port. Yeah. So you're saying there'll be a little thing that'll go on the magnet, and it'll give you a Lightning port.
Yes, like the same way the Magic Keyboard makes a USB-C connection over smart connector.
Actually, that's
the
proof of concept, isn't it? Because I charge my...
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I don't get data, but I do charge my iPad Pro with that.
No, the data is being used for something else, and and they'll probably have higher capacity. The thing is, like, Lightning was great for its time. It was way better than Micro Mini, Mini B, USB, but Apple hasn't needed to improve it. So like it doesn't go past USB 2.0 speed, except for the camera connection kit. It doesn't have Thunderbolt because Apple never put PCIe out on any of those devices. So in general, the speeds are slower. The power charging capabilities are slower. And they could go to USB-C, but that's a mammoth change, especially if they're going to just change it again in a year or two anyway.
Yeah.
Plus I assume that the fact that you have a solution that with the smart connector that doesn't require any ingress at all, not only does it happen, does it improve dust ingress and moisture ingress, but also it means that that's more internal space that they don't have to devote.
But you're going to have speakers, right? I mean, you're going to have some holes in the case.
The speakers have that weird baffling thing that that pushes water out as it pulls it in. Like it's a, they have a bunch of little smart stuff for that.
Okay.
Like on your Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Makes
yeah.
it like spits. A little buzz and it spits the water out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Also, every time you insert a lightning connector or USB connector, you're pushing into it.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's another problem. I don't hate this idea. I still think that a more internationally standardized connector is the way to go. But if as I always say, take something away from me, that's fine, but give me something back in return. And I don't think that the edge, I don't think that protecting me from my not being able to take care of my phone is a huge advantage. But if you were to, if it were to enable a new line of accessories, such as a sort of a portable dock that says, okay, well, you don't, you're still, Andy, you're still upset that you don't have a USB-C and you don't have a headphone jack. Well, great. Here is a case that you drop the phone in that will actually add an extra half inch to the bottom, but will give you that, all those things plus HDMI mini or micro.
Maybe a camera system.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that Blackmagic and other makers would absolutely eat that up. So if it enables the catch 22 of the iPhone has always been this, one of the most powerful CPUs in my office is always the one that's inside an iPhone, but it's stuck inside a vest pocket sized phone, so I can't make full use out of it. But if you were to able to, if I wanted to spend $400 for a really awesome camera sled for it, or a $300 for a really awesome productivity sled for it, If it allowed me to say, yes, I spent $1,000 for the top of the line pro level phone, but it allows me to not have to carry so much around with me, nor to buy so many external things. That's why I don't hate that idea. That's a very interesting idea.
I love it.
I would like it bifurcated. I would like it if the iPhone 12, I'm calling it the iPhone 12 mini because it's just going to be cute and small. The iPhone 12 mini and the iPhone 12 had, or I sorry, iPhone 13 mini and iPhone 13 had the smart connectors, and the Pros got USB-C for exactly the same reasons the iPad Pro does. It's like, it just feels like if you put the word Pro on it, like MacBook Pro, iPad Pro, iPhone Pro, those kind of people would benefit from super high speed charging, super high speed connections, all the things that you get with USB-C. And they're also the only people on earth who can tell a USB-C, a USB-C PD, and a Thunderbolt 3 cable apart, because why make the same connector when all the cables are different?
I think of is the fact that this would now officially mean that every single person with an iPhone of this year absolutely couldn't use wired headphones under any circumstance. They couldn't use an adapter. They couldn't, you know, plug it into a 3.5 millimeter jack. They would have to be USB, or they would have to be Bluetooth headphones or GTFO.
Or smart connector adapters for headphones.
I don't think that would work, though. A magnetic smart adapter, I don't think would work. I think the movement of our heads and where we place our phones, I don't think a smart connector would be a safe connection.
Well, it's the Andy case thing. You make it a case that hits the pogo plugs on the back, and then it gives you
audio
out.
But is this something that Apple would offer? For free.
We've had these smart connectors for a while. I don't see a huge number of third party smart connector devices. Probably
that's very true. It's an expensive licensing. I know, right. I've talked to some developers of keyboards that just it's just too cost prohibitive for them to be able to keep the case price down. Yeah.
Yeah. So Apple,
particularly when Bluetooth is free. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to do this, Apple, it would be nice if you lowered the licensing fee, because it would be fun to. I mean, at least we should have a little that has a USB-C on it.
It's
as
not
well
so
as
much the licensing fee. It's that the chip, like Apple goes through so many. That was a problem with Lightning. Like a lot of people think that Apple sticks with Lightning because of the money, the massive amounts of money they make off MFI. They make less money than it's in Tim Cook's sofa cushions. Like they waste more money on chamfering edges than they make off MFI.
You have to come up with a better analogy than the money that I would happily take in lieu of any salary.
It's probably six figures, I'm thinking.
But it's six figures for a company that makes $75 billion per quarter on an iPhone. But the thing is that they literally couldn't make enough chips. Like Apple was, it wasn't so much the licensing fee as you had to be licensed. It was a process, yes, but you literally could not buy the chips because Apple was sucking every chip they could make out of the supply chain.
Yeah, but I love Andy's vision of a variety of devices going on that smart connector.
Too.
And Apple, it would behoove Apple to make that doable.
But they'd have to make the chips, not like they could make the fee zero. And if you can't get a chip, you can't get a chip.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
So make the chips, Apple. You have resources.
I'm sure they're thinking of it. I'm sure they want to do it. All right, let's take a little break. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, Lori Gill. I like Andy's. I'm Andy. He raised his hand. I'm Lori.
I just want to say hello.
Hello. Hello.
It's what the members of the Hollywood Squares would do when they're in a row. And Rosemary.
Hey. Or hold up a card that says,
Andy Iannocco to block.
I'm not wearing pants. Alex is taking the week off. Was he forced to, or was he gladly taking the week off to go to work? I don't know. We never know with Alex.
Did they find something in his Twitter feed?
why can't it be both, Leo? Why can't it be both?
But I'm sure Alex will be back next week. Our show today brought to you by CashFly. Quite literally, it's our CDN, our content delivery network. It brings you the shows, whether you download them on the website or you download them from iTunes or you subscribe in a pod. It's all coming from CashFly. And we've been doing that for years. In fact, CashFly delivers for us petabytes of data every month. We do that for a few reasons. One, because it saves us a lot of money versus just downloading it from our website or an Amazon S3 bucket or something. Two, because you always get it fast. You never, and this is probably something you never notice. You would notice, though, if we're hesitant or slow or you couldn't get the podcast. I know you'd notice it then. That's why I love CashFly. It's been delivering content and innovating on this over the last 21 years, since 1999. In fact, they've got a new innovation that I really love. And I'm going to try to explain this to people who don't use CDNs. But if you do, you know what happens if you get a cash miss. Right? Oh, the content is not in the cache. That means you have to go out and transfer that content over to the cache server from whatever the source is. And that can really cost you money and slow you down. CacheFly has a new solution. It's called 100% Cache Shield. And with this new feature, you're going to benefit from a drastic reduction in data transfer fees with whatever you use, AWS's S3 and any cloud storage origin, by increasing your cache hit ratio to 100%. You eliminate cache misses. And boy, customers love it because they don't want buffering. They don't want any delay. They want everything to zip, zip, zip. You can't do that if your cached items are being evicted for large one-off requests costing you a fortune in data transfer out fees. But you won't have to. With 100% Cache Shield and CacheFly's guaranteed availability, you avoid it completely. It's a next-generation content delivery solution. What it is, basically, is a dedicated storage space just for you on CacheFly. That way, you keep your content and data closer to your customers. You don't have to transit across other companies' networks. You can purchase as much space as you want or need, and your data will always be fetched from 100% Cache Shield rather than from your origin. That means shielding reduces your origin spend by as much as thousands a month. No cache misses. It also remarkably improves download speeds, eliminates buffering, guaranteed availability, the highest quality of service. So if you're video streaming, you can easily scale to reach global audiences of any size. If you're doing a game, you get hyper-fast download speeds, low latency all the time. If you have a podcast like us, never worry. Your podcast will always arrive quickly and reliable. No delays, no timeouts. And no sudden giant bills from your source. You'll get lightning fast digital download speeds for large digital files no matter where your customers are. You're going to love it. CacheFly's global throughput performance dominance ensures any cache misses are delivered 5 times faster than they would be from your origins. Look, I shouldn't have to sell this to you. I am such a believer. We've used this for almost 10 years on Twitter now. I wouldn't do anything else. We've been approached many times, and I've always said, no, I love CacheFly. See how much CacheFly could save you. You can get a detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends. Right now, if you go to twit.cachefly.com, it's not a hard sell. They're not going to push you. They're just going to help you. See if you're paying 20% or more than you have to for a content delivery network. And if you're not on a CDN, see how much CacheFly can make a difference. twit.cachefly.com. You got to use CacheFly. That's what we've been using forever. We love it. CacheFly. twit.cachefly.com. CacheFly.com. let's see. What was the bug? Maybe Laura, you know this one. This app is no longer shared bug.
I read that article, and I have not heard of this bug.
Oh.
It must not have been a very big one. I'm sure it existed, but I have not come across that or read anything about it other than MacRumor's comment on that. So
yeah,
that one was new to me.
I installed 13.5 right away. Never had a problem. Apparently.
And I just hadn't read it anywhere. It wasn't big enough. I'm sure that there's plenty of people who have experienced it. Otherwise, you know, that it wouldn't have been talked about in any forums. But it just wasn't big enough to catch my attention.
You may not notice it because it was something that went wrong in the apps with 13.5. And these apps were immediately updated. And most people only noticed it because they got two updates in a row or they got a quick update to an update on the apps. MacRumors posits it might be an expired certificate or other credential related to app sharing, and that Apple has had to reissue those updates to include a valid certificate. That's their theory. Yeah, I was just curious because I didn't see it either. So maybe only MacRumor readers saw that. Nobody who reads iMore had a problem. Maybe it's a MacRumor problem. Hmm?
It's only MacRumor readers that get that problem.
Yes. This would be very good news if they do this. 9to5 Mac reports that Apple is going to do a Catalyst version of the Messages app on the Mac.
This is really interesting to me for two reasons. One of them is the simple thing of like we get to have an emoji and memoji and stickers on the Mac, something that's been missing from the Messages app on
fireworks.
Mac. The screen changes and things. We've not been able to use those on Mac. So I think that I love this idea. But also this is the first time that Catalyst has been used to fully replace an existing app on the Mac. So this is an interesting step in that direction of you know, they sort of tested the waters by putting brand new Catalyst apps on Mac like the Stocks app. Then they even further tested the waters by changing something like iTunes, which includes podcasts, into two separate apps, which is the music app and the podcast app, which is on Catalyst. But this is actually replacing app for app the Messages app, if this does happen. And I'm wondering, what does that mean for the future of built-in apps using Catalyst on the Mac in the future?
Do you think so? One reason to do it is so you have feature parity with the phone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's exactly the same. It's you know, I understand.
But maybe not with the Mac, because the Mac does things the phone doesn't. Like you can screen share from the Buddies menu, which you can't do on iOS.
Oh.
And I hope they don't lose things.
So you might lose things. Huh?
I hope not. I mean, the functionality is there. I just hope that they implement it.
It would also be a really nice demo of Catalyst. I'm sure they're anxious to show people what a great job Catalyst can do with your existing iOS apps porting them to the Mac, right?
Playground was pretty good. I think that's probably the best job they've done so far.
The Swift Playground that they moved from iOS. Yeah. They've done it with voice memos. They've done it with the podcast app, the Stocks app. Not exactly challenging.
Yeah.
It'd be really interesting.
I thought it was the Catalyst apps that were bad, and then I realized it's all those media apps.
They're just
even
bad.
The Cocoa ones.
They're just bad apps. Yeah. But it'd be interesting if you did it with Catalyst and showed that you could have Mac-specific features.
Well, like multi-window, because you can click on a message and it pops up into its own window, which is not a feature. Like you can tear out things on the iPad, but you can't. Like if I'm iMessaging Lori, I can just double-click on that, make it its own window. I can do all sorts of Mackety Mac things on it right now. You can even old-school slash status and say like how I'm feeling. How many of those make it
that.
Over? Yeah, yeah,
oh, that's cool.
I mean, it's iChat really. It was a repurposed iChat. It's got Daniel Jalka's little fingerprints all over it.
Yeah. Would it take, John Gruber tweeted, it would be the end of the line for Apple script. He says, to be clear, if Apple does go the Catalyst route with Mac messages, I'd expect Apple script to be DOA.
Shortcuts would be there it is. Yeah, shortcuts would be the alternative.
You require shortcuts on Mac OS, which seems possible. This would be, so this is one of those bellwether things. Now, by the way, this all comes from the iOS 14 mysterious floating around, never released beta version.
Internal build.
The gift that keeps on giving. is it possible that it's meaningless and that this 14 is just full of strange things that will never make it to the real world?
It's full of possibilities.
Totally possible.
Full of certainties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll treat it like that. But I thought it was interesting that Gruber took that seriously, that, you know, that would be meaningful. And that is one of, that's a Mac feature, Mac-only feature that most people don't care about or use, but those who do care a lot about.
But I mean, it's I want to say embarrassing because they debuted the new messages for iOS 3-4 years ago. I mean, the people who debuted it on stage now run their own startup. That's how long ago it was. And it still does bracket sent with fireworks bracket, like I'm a third class citizen.
Yeah.
Just that sort of stuff. And they unified those teams 2-3 years ago. That kind of stuff, just it's a lack of resources on the Mac side. And they need to either increase the resources or increase the efficiency. And Catalyst increases the efficiency.
Let's talk about TV. We're all a little bit more interested in TV than we used to be. I did not see the Friday Mythic Quest. Did you? The quarantine
episode? I haven't
seen episode?
That episode yet.
Yeah. So I stopped watching Mythic Quest because it was so annoying. But I might.
What episode did you stop on?
I really loved the flashback episode.
Okay, you did watch that one.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic. Okay. We talked about it. It had nothing with anything.
Right.
It was just dropped in the middle. And that was good. And then the next episode after that, I think, was the one I stopped watching because it went back to its old ways, including, you know, some, I think, a lot of stereotypes of people that I don't like. I feel bad that F. Murray Abraham is forced to be a doddering old man and a blowhard. And, this is partly because it comes from Rob McElhenney, who did It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and that's kind of his style. So, if you haven't seen, and I'll just skip right ahead to this episode just because I'm curious. It's all shot on iPhone. It's the quarantine version. They're all at home.
There's
Apple
some interesting
sent,
information.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Apple sent 40 new iPhones and 20 sets of earbuds to the team. And they wrote the episode with... McElhenney wrote it with David Hornsby, who's also in the show, and Megan Gans, who's the show's co-creator. They wrote it in 3 weeks. Not just wrote it in 3 weeks. They shot it, they edited it, and they got it ready to air in 3 weeks. And in fact, Apple liked it so much, they're submitting it for Emmy consideration. Did you see it? Have you seen it? Anybody?
I haven't seen it yet. The opportunity yet. Yeah.
I would never have known except for this, the article. And actually, the only reason I know is because Micah Sargent said it was really good. So,
or in Micah, we trust.
In Micah, we trust.
I'm really impressed with the way creators are navigating remote entertainment. And when you can really do something special with it, I think it was the Parks and Rec had something kind of similar where they made an episode, they called it the reunion episode, they put it up on YouTube, and it was pretty high quality and well edited. It was written, it was scripted, but it used the shelter in place order to help further the story along. And you got all the jokes and all the funny things in it, but it was, this kind of perspective, like what I'm looking at right now, which is your face in front of a computer screen. And it's really fun to watch how creators are turning, the means they have into something fun and interesting and creative.
Yeah.
What was the primetime drama that had an episode that was nearly done, but they had to finish it using CGI? Not even convincing CGI, but just okay. Well, look,
here's
we got
a cartoon
to do...
of what
wasn't
we were going
to
do.
Wasn't it the Blacklist where they went to an animated ending?
Yeah.
Wow. That's weird.
I mean, that's it's weird, but it's fascinating. It made me think that what if part of the knock on effects is that we realized that, gee, why haven't we been doing like weekly dramas in animation?
Right.
Like, what? Not talking about like last minute. We're doing this because of coronavirus animation. But what if you had the situation where now we can actually set scenes wherever they want, and we can have crowd scenes as big as we want? And in terms of isolation and coronavirus, it would probably not be that difficult to have. We have a motion capture stage that can be operated by minimal people on site. And the other thing would be you can't get Tom Hanks to do an entire story arc on the Blacklist or something like that. But if you said, yeah, actually, if Tom says, you know what, I have 17 days off, I love your show. Like if I can get in and out and do all of my scenes in 2 weeks, you got me. That would be it's a lot of problems that get solved very interestingly.
The other thing that's really cool is that they had a side story about a charitable donation, and they raised in real life $600,000 for Mercy Corps in their COVID-19 relief program. So it'd be really churlish of you to hate on this show anymore. So I'm going to now love this show, and I will watch it and give a donation too. But it's pretty cool. Of course, it's no accident that it's on Apple TV Plus. So of course, Apple sent 40 iPhones immediately. It's like, yeah, sure, that's a good idea. Let's show off what we can do. Oh, I like that. Modern Family did an iPhone episode, right?
A FaceTime episode,
right? So this is not unprecedented.
We had a couple.
Yeah.
They had one where the father was trying to buy an iPad, and then years later they had one where they could only talk over FaceTime.
Right, right.
And they made up versions of FaceTime for the Mac that I still wish existed today.
It's a little gimmicky. I don't know. Does it work? I don't know.
Also, you can't do the finale of The Silence of the Lambs with like point of view shots by people holding up phones. Yeah, you need two actors together playing off each other.
Well. Any other? There are some new Apple TV Plus shows.
I just started watching the one with the young girl reporter. I'm blanking on the name now, but she moves back to her family's hometown and promptly sniffs out crime.
Oh yeah,
is all about it.
Yeah, I saw
it's a little bit over the top, but it's pretty good. And it seems like they're collecting the Avengers because Ruffalo has some show on with, and Captain America has a courtroom drama. And they're not holding back on budget. That's one thing.
Then they are starting to acquire back catalog, a lot of back catalog, because they realize if you're going to subscribe to a channel, you can't just have the hot new shows.
Make the hot new shows now. Like, that's their biggest problem. I think that their original plan was to churn out high rate because they're putting out stuff faster, I think, than a lot of other networks are putting it out. They just had new shows almost every week or every month, but now nothing is in production.
Right.
And that's a huge gap, especially when you're running out of free users.
So apparently Apple has gone to a lot of content companies and said, you know, we'd like some back catalog. They've also been doing pretty well. They're not they are surging, not the most surging, but they've done pretty well during the crisis. This is Business Insider. Apple TV Plus signups in March and April were no greater than February, according to Antenna. Suggesting that the growth is slow compared to others during the coronavirus pandemic. Okay, I take it back. I thought they were doing well. Apparently they're not.
I think the story here is that while Disney Plus and Netflix saw huge surges, the Apple TV Plus service didn't see significant changes.
Right.
They didn't see drops. They just didn't see significant increases. I think if I remember the rest of that story, though, like viewership, like retention seems to be 10% up, which is evidence that more people that already subscribe are actually watching shows now.
Our audiences are warming up to their shows. Defending Jacob, the Chris Evans show, is apparently a breakout hit. They just announced a new sports docuseries. You can do those because you don't have to shoot new video. Greatness Code, which will feature episodes on Tom Brady, LeBron James, Usain Bolt. And I don't – did we talk about this last week? I can't remember. I don't think it had happened yet. They made a deal with Tom Hanks' film company, Greyhound, which was going to be released in theaters. Obviously won't be. There was a bidding war. Sony Pictures ended up going with Apple for $70 million. Not to make the movie. It's already made, just for the exclusive rights to stream it.
That's telling about the company's faith that we'll be able to reopen anything and any numbers by the end of the year. You'll notice that the Black Widow movie has been postponed, not simply moved. That the Wonder Woman movie has been again simply delayed until the end of the year. But when you get to like an Oscar bait sort of movie, where I don't think that there was a lot of high hopes they're going to be making their money back. To begin with, it was probably a prestige thing. That says a lot because those companies are seeing a lot better numbers on likelihood than any of us are.
Does it mean movie theaters are dead?
I don't think so.
They still make more money with a theatrical release, you think? I mean, $70 million is not $300 Disney, million. No,
Disney's policy has always been either show me a $1 billion worldwide gross or go home. They're not going to be ever making that on video on demand. But it'll be interesting to see how this shakes up releases like, again, a World War II period drama or something that's even lower budget than something that can afford to hire Tom Hanks. Those screens are the best way to get your $1 billion worldwide, but maybe it's not the sort of place where the prestige, if you want Captain America to sign on outside of his contract for another Marvel movie, maybe this is not the place to put his movie that you agreed to make because he wants to be seen as a serious actor.
Yeah. How many of you will sign up for HBO Max tomorrow?
I found out that I've already been signed up for it. I got an email from AT&T saying, yes, oh, by the way, but I didn't because my phone is on AT&T and like, okay,
it's so confusing.
Lucky you.
You actually have to. This is a screw up, in my opinion. So many ways you could get it for free, and it's not immediately apparent. I mean, so. You have to spend some energy figuring out, and you would be foolish to spend the $11.99 a month and then find out, I got it for free with AT&T or my cable company. Or there seems like a dozen different ways you could get it for free.
So, HBO has as many different digital packages than Google has messaging platforms, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
I think
a pretty good and, as usual, extremely complicated piece on who's going to get it for free and who isn't and all of this. It does, I have to say, and now you guys love the comic books, and I know there's a lot of comic book content in there. It does look like there's going to be a nice deep catalog. It's a good way to get HBO. For instance, if you already pay for HBO, with the HBO Go app, you'll get HBO Max. You'll just be upgraded automatically to that.
This is so confusing to me. Maybe somebody can explain
it. Mess.
I understand the difference between HBO Go and HBO Max, but what I don't understand is why HBO Go exists anymore now that HBO Max
Now. See, this is the other confusion.
HBO Now.
Go. You're right. Go is the one you get if you already pay for HBO with a cable company.
Yes.
Now is the one you pay a la carte for HBO. So if you're an HBO Now subscriber, you'll get HBO Max. That's what you're paying for.
So then what's HBO Max then if it's different than HBO Now and... Why does HBO Now exist if HBO Max is the same thing but with extra content? It's very confusing. It's specifically because I get it. Max is the one that comes with exclusive content, but it's the exact same price as Now. So why would anybody have HBO Now once Max comes out? Why would they subscribe to it when they can get the exact same price? They just
because
get the exclusive content.
You want Zack Snyder's Justice League cut.
No, I don't.
Which is on Max, right?
Yeah, only.
So why would you subscribe to HBO Now at all?
I don't know. No,
I would like Paul Dini to make a Dark Side movie instead. Thank you. I just checked in Canada, and it says that there's no HBO Max Canada, but some of the content will show up on Bell Media's Crave TV because of content licensing deals, but not all of it because they sold some to Netflix earlier instead. Oops.
I hope you get the new Seth Rogen piece, An American Pickle. He plays a 19. There's a picture of Seth Rogen like you've never seen him before. He plays a 19. Yeah. It's like a daguerreotype. It's amazing. He plays a 1920s immigrant and his computer coding great grandson.
Do they solve crimes in a van?
Yeah, probably. An American Pickle. That comes out August 6th. I like the name. Maybe the immigrant was a pickle maker. I don't know. Yeah, it's very confusing. I kind of want to get it because it looks confusing. Like, yo, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It looks like there'll be good content on it, but I don't want to pay for it because I might have it for free and just not know it. So I have to check my email. Is that what you're saying, Andy? Because, yeah, I think I pay for an AT&T subscription. Oh, what a mess. What a mess. Ridley Scott going to do a deal with Apple TV Plus. It's Scott Free Productions. It's what they call a first look deal. It means that anything Ridley produces, Apple gets to bid on it before anybody else does.
Just because he can't sell the third Aliens prequel?
According to Variety, Apple won Scott Free is the name of it. The company, the production company, won Scott Free's signature in what is described as a pretty competitive environment. Apple is getting freer and freer with the checkbook, right? Ridley Scott will develop global TV projects for Apple TV Plus with Ridley Scott, David Zucker, Clayton Kruger, and Jordan Sheehan acting as executive producers. I don't know what it is.
Can I get a Snyder cut of Aliens Covenant?
Yeah. I mean, they're great. It's great that they're signing these deals, but let's see if they actually turn into any. A, then number two, let's see if it actually turns into any movies. And B, and number three, let's see if they turn into any really good movies.
Like the new Dune movie or the Foundation series that Apple's still working on. I have enough stuff coming that I actually want to see.
Yeah. And Apple has a long relationship with Ridley Scott. Don't forget, he produced the 1984 commercial. So, to date, Apple has inked deals with Studios A24. I think that's the Amazon studio. Imagine Documentaries, Sesame Workshop, and Peanuts. Alfonso Cuarón, who did that amazing Netflix-only Roma movie, which I thought deserved Best Picture.
They're doing Fraggle Rock, Leo. That buys them so many get-out-of-jail-free cards with me.
I know. They've got a deal with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, whose Veep was probably the funniest sitcom of all time, at least one of them. Lee Eisenberg, Oprah Winfrey, of course. There's a new show coming from the showrunner of Dickinson.
Good.
Yeah, she signed a deal with him. And
maybe Apple's game plan is they're just trying to make themselves look attractive to Disney for a potential buyout.
I'm glad Alex Lindsay isn't here.
This is amazing. So in Canada, for HBO Max content, we have to pay $20 a month for the Crave movies plus HBO package. We'll get 1, 2, 3 of the launch shows, but additionally, sometime in the future, we might get 6 others.
What does HBO have against Canada? That's what I want to know.
But why don't they just make it? I mean, like Netflix is international, Disney Plus is international, Apple TV Plus is international. What is so hard about making an international service? CBS and HBO just want, oh no, it's worth more money if we totally fragment the market by selling different rights to different shows in different geographies. Let's do that instead. I'm getting angrier and angrier as I read this.
We talked a lot about Apple's AR glasses last week. That was a great conversation. One of the things I think we said is nobody's talking about the Apple television set anymore or the Apple car. Jean-Louis Gasset has a Monday note on the Apple car. He says, who wouldn't want a neat electric Apple car coming from the Apple Watch, iPhone, and Macintosh maker? It would be an automotive dream come true. Unfortunately, reality refuses to cooperate.
Is that picture of the Dyson car? Did they just take that off the back?
It does. It looks like a Dyson fan.
A car with a proper amount of suction, for sure.
Well, he showed it off for the first time, the car that he never made, and it looked very much like that.
Yeah. But there's an analyst, Morgan Stanley analyst, who talks about. I don't know.
Is it Katie Huberty?
No, it's Adam Jonas, who's known as a Tesla bull because he's never written anything bad about Elon Musk or Tesla.
That's quite a trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. He must not have access to Twitter.
Oh, wait a minute. The reference to Apple, Jonas ropes in his Morgan Stanley colleague, Katie Huberty.
Oh, there we go. See, I think the problem with this is that, like, it's not a, like, there was a lot of really bad reporting. It's like the iPhone wasn't originally an iPhone. Apple bought Fingerworks and had these giant tables trying to figure out what a multi-touch interface was. And then Steve decided to make it a phone because he hated his phone. And then it was productized. And Titan was like, yes, it, like, there was various automation and automotive and all these and imaging and ingestion stuff. But Apple's ambitions were never, like, a car might have been a product spun out of Titan the way iPhone was a product spun out of Purple. But it's not like that's not the sum total of those ambitions, which are still ongoing as in the special projects group.
Should we discount anything Katie Huberty says or...
She wants to make money for her clients.
We believe Apple sees the car, along with other markets like health and payments, as a large market where Apple can contribute to a better solution. We expect Apple, she writes, to spend nearly $19 billion in R&D this year on the car, up more than $10 billion from just 5 years ago. Wait a minute. No, that's an all R&D, so it's meaningless. This compares to the to $100 billion total R&D spent for the entire auto industry.
I think they're asking the wrong questions. Like, what is an Apple car? Is it like a car that you buy and you put in your garage? Or is Apple car a service where there's a fleet of Apple cars in every major city and you book time on it? Or is it an e-bike that, you know, eschews traditional automotives for a very nicely designed bipedal vehicle that takes you? I think all of those are questions yet to be answered, but it may not be anything like what we think of as a traditional car at this point, because those may not be as long that's not the growth industry where those vehicles are going.
Gassay concludes, if Apple has a secret weapon, we must again ask, where are the rumors? The magical Apple car is an attractive fantasy, but I think he thinks it's kind of a fantasy.
Yeah. I don't believe anything that I ever hear about the Apple car becoming an actual product. This is we often talk about the degrees of faith in Apple rumors, with at the very, very top being, okay, just 2 weeks before the launch, or these proposed launch of the iPhone. Okay, at this point, if I see case designs, if I see box designs, I'm willing to believe that this is true. But when you talk about something that really looks like it's just a platform for now, a way of investigating a whole bunch of technologies that could feed into a lot of different things that Apple is doing in services and consumer products, and nothing to do with transportation at all. Again, it's we can speculate all we want. We can try to create as many think pieces as we want. But for now, I don't believe anything that says that it's a real product as opposed to a research project.
Yeah. Like the LiDAR camera, like it probably came from a lot of the people on those teams, because that's the technology of environment ingestion that you need for all the AR projects and all the automotive projects. And that's the kind of technology that comes out of those things, which is kind of cool.
Laura, you read all the stories. Anything else that seems important to mention that I've left out? I feel like
let's see. My days are so mixed up right now. Wednesday, I think it was Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And this month is Accessibility Awareness Month. So I think it's probably a good thing to mention that, which from the Apple's perspective, if you're kind of taking things like that into consideration, Apple has always been at the forefront of making features accessible in their technology. And I've always been really impressed with how every new operating system that comes out takes into consideration how this affects the accessibility community. And they make sure that if there are changes, that they're made very aware. I've been reading quite a few articles and watching videos and things like that about the different things that Apple does with accessibility. There's their learning resource center now has videos up that will have, someone in the ALS community doing sign language while, telling you how to, do something like use clips on your phone or something like that. And these are little ways in which Apple is reminding us all how important accessibility is to them. So
they made for Accessibility Day. They made a playlist, long playlist with 21 videos on how to add accessibility features to your phone or how to use accessibility features. I think this is great. This is all on YouTube. How to use Reader View and Speak Screen in Safari and so forth. Of course, it depends on your disability, but this is a really useful thing to have these. There's also an entire section of the Apple website devoted to accessibility. It's apple.com/accessibility with lots of interesting stuff in here. So, yeah, I think Apple has absolutely been a leader in all of this. And every time I talk to blind listeners, we have a lot of blind listeners on the radio show, they universally say the iPhone has really nailed it. It's the best of the breed, and it's definitely the one to use. So, yeah, good on Apple. In fact, we had a couple of people visit in the studio back when we had visitors in the studio who worked on Apple's accessibility team.
Aren't they amazing?
Yeah, they're just great. And one was a blind guy who had worked in retail. Apple said, "You, come here. We want you to work and help make sure that our stuff works for people with low and no vision." I mean, it's just, this is the way to do it.
Even Apple PR for accessibility is, you know, someone from the accessibility community. The thing that blew my mind when I started doing this 4 years ago, I had a talk with them and they're like, "We made the camera accessible." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" They're like, "Yeah, you know, blind people want to take selfies. Maybe they can't see them, but they send them to their family and friends. So the camera will say, face not in focus, face too dark, turn, do this. So they get good selfies too, because of course they should have that."
That's so awesome.
Like, just go, team.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
They do that on the on Android's camera too. That's the amount of work that's being done is, and the fact that it used to be taught, you got the impression that this is something that they're doing in addition to all the other work that they're doing, and now someone who is a much better reporter on accessibility than I am would be able to speak more clearly about this. But I do get the impression that it's just like the camera features, just like the build features, just like the cellular chips, that this is a tier one feature. This is a tier one responsibility of the engineering team on both the Google team and the Apple team.
I really like to hear that about the Google team, Andy. I think it was a few years ago that I was at Google I/O and talking with some accessibility people who were saying that they prefer the Android operating system, but because of their needs, they were using iPhone because it actually that's the only thing that was really working for them. So to hear that Google finally kind of decided, okay, we are going to make this a tier one, as you say, responsibility to make sure that it's not after we make the feature that we decide whether or not we can make it accessible, but we're not going to make the feature unless we can also make it accessible. I like to hear that they're expanding on that more.
They have a dedicated accessibility team. Here's that video you mentioned from today at Apple. This is Gus S., who's teaching you how to use Clips and ASL.
Apple Carnegie. They have a huge amount of ASL people at Apple Carnegie because it's down the street from the American Hearing Institute.
It's so great. I just think this is just fantastic, man.
This is also, this kind of video is, it has audio to it. It has a narrator.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. So I turned off the
voiceover for accessibility for non-deaf people, which is amazing.
I love that.
Yeah. So what I love about it is that it brings us all together. It reminds us that there are people in the community that use sign language to learn, but that it also, it's, you know, just using VoiceOver is another way to make that work for us, so that we're all together in it, you know. And this video I actually thought was really just a great, it was a great little mix for all of us, you know.
It's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And ASL, when you watch somebody who's fluent in it, which Gus is a beautiful language. It's just really fun to watch.
And they have accents. It's like it's endlessly amazing to learn.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to add, Microsoft, too, they've done things like the accessibility controller for Xbox. And it's great to see all the companies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've always wanted them to be as competitive with accessibility as they have with cameras. Like, get up on stage and say what you're doing to raise the bar as much as you talk about camera technology or this cool algorithm thing. Make accessibility high-order competitive bit, and it looks like they're all doing that now, which is just amazing.
So, Lori, I'm really
glad
you
brought that up. And people get upset about it. They're
like, "Great, thank you.
Why do we need this?" But we all need it. Like, sometimes you go to the doctor and your pupils are dilated, or you fall and hurt your leg, or fall and hurt your wrist. And as we get older, our vision changes, our hearing changes, and it really is about everyone. And a lot of the amazing features we have, even every day on our devices now, come from accessibility teams making accessibility features that were then realized they could make interface better for everybody. So it's like, it's a win, total win-win.
Yeah. But also what needs to be pointed out, I'll admit that I had an area of ignorance regarding accessibility in the world, thinking that I think it's a good idea to have curb cutouts. It's a good idea to make sure that subway stations are accessible to everybody, and which sounds like it's a good way of thinking, but I had not made that leap until it's not that it's good to have these things. These things have to be there because you can't shut out the world. It's that people with disabilities are absolutely 100% entitled to all of the same things that everybody else gets to do in this world. I suppose that if we can modify this restaurant layout so that it can accommodate people who need assistive mobility devices. No, you have to do that. And I'm glad to see Apple and Google again change their attitude for, isn't it nice that we're doing this, and isn't it nice that we pay so much attention? It's like, and their attitude is that it seems to be, again, someone who is more active journalism in this field will is a better person to talk, but it's like no, we have to do this, we are obligated to do this, we are not we don't have the choice of making a device that can be used by some people but not by others.
Couldn't and Andy, more. don't ever feel like you have to wait for somebody with more expertise to be the one to talk about this. Like, we should all be talking about it. I don't know anything about accessibility needs, but I know we need more. And I think it's great for us to champion it. Whether or not we know what it means or how to do it, we should always be fighting for that and be reminding all of our corporations and leaders that they need to be doing that too.
Yep.
And retweeting James Rath and Steve Aquino and all those wonderful people.
Exactly. No, exactly. That's why. That's why it's especially Steve. I love the work that he's doing. I love the. I just love all of that. And I just need to acknowledge that part of the problem is that you have people who don't deal with these things day to day to day. You know, members of that community should be the voices that talk about it, as opposed to people like me talking for a community that I'm not a part of.
So thank you, Lori, for bringing that up. Very important. Good, excellent points. And boy, Apple really knocked it out of the park on this one. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Let us do our picks of the week, starting with you, Lori Gill. I buy everything you talk about, so make it good.
Gird your wallet.
This one is going to be an expensive pick. Uh-oh. So over the weekend, it was the Memorial Day weekend, you know, a couple extra days.
Did you buy
it's
a
grilling
pool?
Weekend. I got a Traeger Wi-Fi Pro 780 pellet grill, and it is amazing. Okay, here's the thing, and like I absolutely hands down love this one. They have a smaller version that's a little less expensive, but this is why I love it so much. We put some ribs on the grill at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I went grocery shopping. I took a nap. All I had to do was go out and check to make sure that the pellets were still in the container, because everything, the temperature in the grill was already on my phone. I knew that the heat was at the right level, that and it automatically, it's amazing how much smoking it becomes a wonderful experience when you're not down there, you know, shoveling the fire yourself to try to keep it going.
And Lori, if you had just purchased the $49.99 Traeger pellet sensor, you wouldn't even have to check the pellets.
Exactly.
The Wi-Fi sounds awesome.
That's my next. That's my next investment for sure.
Oh, I'm buying this now. Our big green egg is on its last legs, and we need a new grill. This looks
you
great.
You have to experience the smoking of it. So I
looks
know
like
if you
a smoker.
It an analog smoker. I have a smoker that you have to feed with the wood chips.
Future smoker.
I never use it because it's so time consuming. But with it's an electric smoker. You just throw your meat on and you check your app every once in a while to make sure that it's working.
Do you have to put?
You use pellets instead. The pellets replace it.
Do they have smoky pellets like hickory pellets?
Yes. They do. They have different flavor of pellets, like mesquite and hickory. Those are two examples. Applewood. And you feed it through. And what happens is, depending on the temperature that you want to heat to, you get more or less of the actual smoke inside the grill. So if you want it to be very smoky, if you want it to really have a strong smoke flavor, you smoke it at, you know, 180 to 220 or something like that. If you want your meat to be less smoky but still have the slow cook experience, you would take it up a notch to maybe 250 or something like that. It's so amazing. I am never going back to using a wood chip smoker because the set it and forget itness of it is so fantastic. And the food difference, the difference in taste, you know, because using wood chips and real flames, it's obviously going to have a better flavor to it, but it's negligible. And the flavoring of the meat that came out from the Traeger grill was so good. Everybody should do this. It's amazing. Really loved it.
I really love my Big Green Egg, but it's a lot of work. I got to go out and buy lump charcoal. I got to set it all up.
Well, you wanted a Big Green Egg, Leo. A small size Big Egg wasn't enough for you.
You have to babysit it.
That's the hard part.
iPhone tells you when it's done?
Yes, it tells you. You can keep track of the temperature to make sure that it's always smoking at the temperature you want it to be. You can set a timer from inside your house. You can turn it on and preheat it.
From work?
From inside the house. Go smoke your meats. Come back inside the house for 4 hours if you want to. And just check your phone to make sure that everything is maintaining its appropriate speed and everything. And then go back out when it's done. And never have had to open the grill once if you don't want to.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But the iPhone doesn't eat your ribs then, does it? Like, it's not like I did all the work. I deserve all the food. It's not like...
Right, exactly. And the iPhone also won't wash the dishes when it's done either.
Okay, that's fair then.
Oh, I like this. I'm buying it, by the way.
You knew it, Leo. You predicted this.
I knew I would. Oh, man, this looks so good. It's expensive. It's $1,000. It's not a cheap grill. But it's going to last me a lifetime, right?
Yeah, and it really is really good. It works really well. I was really impressed. We did multiple cooks because I wanted to, you know, test all the features out. I slow cooked vegetables on it. I grilled hot hamburgers on it. So making sure that you still get kind of the same grilling needs out of the way, and did the smoking of the meats. And all three of those different experiences all turned out really good. The meat was fantastic. The vegetables were nice and soft and not overcooked.
What kind of meat, Lori? So, yeah. Chris, what would you make?
I made the pork ribs and regular old hamburgers, and then the vegetable mix was a medley of potatoes and onions and peppers and things like that.
Barbecue.
Okay, yeah. Andy, you talk while I buy this grill.
Well, this one is free because all the money is being, well, actually, it's being spent by taxpayers. Tomorrow is Tuesday as we record. Wednesday is going to be the launch of Demo 2, the SpaceX.
Everybody's excited about that. Yeah.
The first crewed U.S. Trip to the to space since the end of the shuttle program. The first brand new spacecraft and since 1981, I was reading some statistics that there have only been 9 launches of brand new spaceships in human history. This is the fifth that the Americans have put up, and it really is going to be a whoop to do. So I'm going to be glued to. I decided I'm going to have 2 screens going. NASA TV is usually what I'm watching launches on. I'm also going to have the Science Channel's live coverage up. I think they're streaming it at science.com or Science and Discovery Channel.com. They seem to have a really good team of color commentators going. 4 astronauts, another ISS astronaut that's actually in orbit. I was attracted to the idea of Adam Savage from Mythbusters. I was a little bit put off by the fact that Katy Perry apparently is going to be part of this at some point, but it is like 3 hours of coverage. So even if they have her do a musical
number,
that should be
an ass. astronaut.
Yeah. It's okay. That's fine. It's going to be fine. But I really think it's going to be an exciting thing to see. I love the fact that I'm so befuddled by so much of this. Like I'm kind of fixated on the pressure suits because they famous. Of course, it was Elon. It's Elon Musk company. So they hired the company that. Coincidentally enough, designed movie spacesuits, including the spacesuits for Prometheus. But the thing is, the fake Prometheus spacesuits look more realistic than the real pressure suits that are going on. This is the first because I realize there's an American patch. There is the crew member's name is like on the shoulder, but the front is totally blank. They don't even have a mission patch on it. And I have to remind myself that Andy, these are fully functional, actual protective garments, and you're complaining they don't look as nice as the fake ones that do nothing to save anybody's life. So I'm just reminding people that it's going to be really, really cool. I feel as though this is going to be the sort of thing that you remember and are glad to have watched live, including all of the awkward moments, including all the awkward pauses during delays, including all the moments when they realize that, ooh, we really thought we were going to fill like 2.5 to 3 hours with this. Because that's one of the reasons why I love NASA TV, because I'm not going to watch the SpaceX feed because I know they've planned this out way too much. And they're going to say, and now here's a special motivational video of, you know, when the eagle sometimes breaks its wing and has to spend, oh, for God's sake, what's on YouTube right now? But yeah, I'm definitely not only going to be watching it, but I'm going to be capturing it so that I can watch it later.
I only have one question. Where do I get wood pellets?
You know, I found them. I found
we have people slipping the surly bonds of Earth and catching the hand of God. And you want to know about
pellets? We flew to the moon and we liked it.
Yeah, but can you smoke meats on the moon?
No. There's no zero gravity.
We're never going to find out unless we get commercial space launches back up and running.
I am just teasing you, Andy. I am just as excited as you are.
I know I'm being teased. Believe me. I spent enough time in junior high to know when I'm being teased.
I will be watching with everyone else.
I hear the tears coming from the back.
And if Katy Perry sings,
I flew to the moon and I liked it.
Yeah,
Rocket
there you
Man.
Go. I'm telling you, yeah, Rocket Man. She could do Rocket Man.
Yeah.
All right, that's fine. I'm gonna enjoy all 3 hours. That's awesome.
I just
I'll
wish we were Annie Lennox
while watching it.
That's all.
Yeah, I should have some smoked meats while I'm watching.
It'll take about 3 hours.
I literally ordered that. I literally the minute you told me.
I'm gonna have to send. I'm sorry.
Well,
they're gonna have to send up Lisa, Sophie Ziegler's secret military shuttle.
We barbecue a lot, especially in the summer. Lisa's always saying, oh, Leo, can you fire up the grill? And I gotta, and I'm gonna get all smoky and smelly, and I gotta do the coals. I go through these chimney starters, one every month or two because the fire gets hot and they melt. I got a slag heap at the bottom of the grill, and I think you've talked me into it. As long as it gives me that smoky flavor, and it sounds like it does. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know it'll give you that.
And
smoky
by the
flavor.
Way, Jammer B's sister, right? Has one of these, and Jammer B's jumping up and down. He's coming over for a social distancing barbecue the minute this arrives, okay?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Louisiana hot links all around.
It's the long ribs. It's the long ribs, not the short ribs.
Oh, I'm going to get some brisket, smoke it. Yeah. This is a smoker, right?
Yeah. You can grill, but it's a smoker. Yeah.
I'm so excited. I know it's terrible for you, though, right? It's carcinogenic. It's going to kill me. But I don't care because I'll go happy.
I mean, if you don't eat it every day.
nothing you eat during quarantine. It's a new Italian proverb. Mm. No one gains weight during quarantine. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I thought I was going high, but Lori Gill, she just spiked the ball. So if you woke up on the internet today, then you woke up to the news that Sony had released a new vloggers camera.
Oh, shoot. I'm in trouble. I can't buy two things in one show.
There were videos from just about every one of the people that we all know and adore. And it's got a lot of the features that people have been waiting for in a Sony camera, nay, any blogging camera for years now, including a flip around screen, which is something that, you know, Sony had been hesitant to do. But it's light. It's, you know, it goes for a while. It has a few, like, I wouldn't call them deal breakers, but a few flaws. Like it only goes to 4K 30, so you can't do 4K 60 and then slow it down. It also has micro USB on it, like we're still in the 70s. But those things aside, it's got like a little dead cat you can put on the microphone.
I love
it has
that.
Like an optional.
It's so cute.
It's got an optional blogger handle that you can put on it to carry it around with. It can also become a tripod and is a remote control. It's really small. It is a fixed lens. It starts off at, I think, f1.8, but it rapidly goes to f2.8 when you start, you know, zooming in at all on anything. But still, Sony's got really good image science, really good color science. It's got a button on it that will change the focal depth, so you'll get, it's like a bokeh button, but not computational. Mm. It's like, okay, you want to see everybody? Okay, you want the background blurred.
Well,
so that
cool.
If you're not really adept at cameras, it'll do it for you. You can reprogram that if you are adept at cameras and you don't want to waste a button on that, which is really nice. The picture quality looks really, really good. I forget the name, HDL. It can shoot in the profile that gives you the higher dynamic range. And it's just, it's $700 plus, you know, extra if you want the vlogger grip. But if you're just starting out or you want an extra camera or a B cam or one day, again, a travel cam that you can go out with. It does have beauty modes for people like me who, you know, don't look as fresh as we used to. So you can have zero light, medium, or heavy beautification on it. It's got a bunch of different color profiles. So there's always seems like every camera has one flaw that you can't really tell why they did it. But, you know, this is really well-rounded. And I think it's a great camera for anybody who wants to get in on sort of not the TikTok-y video. That's your phone is still better for that. But anyone who wants to get into the vlogger life.
ZV-1, the vlog camera, yeah. The Sony ZV or ZV-1. So the grip it looks like the grip is also, it's a gimbal. Is that right? Or no?
It's not a gimbal. It will be a tripod. It's Bluetooth, but you have to actually hold it. Like, I don't believe it does any, there's no
They're
robotic.
Saying they have some steady features.
They have image stabilization on the camera.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And it just you shows can turn, you. And the focus is instant. Like they have like an unboxing mode where you can go from like here's the phone, here's me, here's the phone, and it just instantly sharpens, instantly focuses on it.
Yeah, it really just shows you how big this category is that Sony would make a camera just for vloggers.
Yeah.
Well,
there's an unboxing mode. Okay, I'm glad that people who need this feature have this feature. I weep that this feature
exists
big enough that
I think they call it showcase mode. I don't think they call it, but okay. Everyone who did a video on it immediately called it unboxing mode.
Oh, that's hysterical. Okay. Well, you know, I'm not going to buy this one because I already have a lot of equipment.
We're all waiting for the Canon R5, EOS R5.
They're mirrorless, yeah. So
it's going to be 8K. So.
It's $750. Is it must be a 1-inch sensor. Is it? It's like the RX 100. So it's
yes, almost the same.
So wow, I mean the RX 100 is more expensive, I think. So that's pretty cool with those features.
And it's built to vlog, Leo.
It's built to vlog, just like you, Renee Ritchie, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. Yes, YouTube's Renee Ritchie. I'm going to just do a quick pick just because. They deserve a little credit. Claris is back, baby. Yes. And FileMaker 19 just came out. The biggest update in 15 years. Yes, FileMaker's been around forever. I've done a lot of FileMaker apps. It really is. You know what? I'm glad they're updating it because it's a great low-code solution.
Yeah.
It's been around forever, 3 decades now. You can even now use JavaScript. They've got a bunch of new add-ons. It supports Siri shortcuts. What? And Apple's Core ML. You can use NFC to read tags. This is a pretty amazing thing. And for me, the thing that put me over the top is you can host your apps on Linux, which is a great place to. I've always wanted to redo our sales app, which was written in a fairly janky fashion and breaks all the time. And I always thought this would be the way to do it, is in FileMaker. And if we could host it on Linux, have our clients all over, that would be really great. So, Claris, they're back. FileMaker 19 just came out, the biggest update in 15 years. And the way they do this, much like Adobe, you don't buy it outright. You subscribe per user per month. But I think it's well worth it if you're a business and you need some. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it's a database with that's focused on presentation. Is that a good way to put it? I really love FileMaker, so I'm glad to see it's around. Well, we have completed our assignment for today, which is to entertain the troops for 1 hour, 46 minutes, and 15 seconds. So I thank you. When I saw that Joe Rogan got sold to Spotify or went exclusive to Spotify for the guess is $100 million, and I saw that his shows are often longer than 3 hours, it vindicated me. It made me feel like, oh, I guess our shows aren't that long. They're not that bad. And he only talks to one person the whole time.
Yeah.
So come on.
He does one show. He's lazy.
Although he has almost 2,000 Joe Rogan experiences in the can. So congratulations, Joe, on that success. It's really great. Thank you, Lori Gill. She's the managing editor at iMore.
You can make me an executive.
She's an executive at iMore.com. She's Appleholic, and she's smoking her meats. Gotta get smoking those meats. Yep. All the time, every Tuesday, right here. We're so glad to have you, and thank you for helping me spend even more money.
I'm so sorry.
Well, I've got a song I'm going to play for you after the show. We have Andy Iannocco. He is on WGBH in Boston. When?
This Friday at 11:30 a.m. Awesome. Go to WGBHnews.org. Stream it live. Stream it later.
And, of course, Iannocco.com, IHNATKO.com.
I like the extra flair in the end. That's cool.
IHN. And thank you so much for joining us, Renee Ritchie. Don't forget the Renee Ritchie YouTube channel, a must subscribe wherever you are. We go out with a special song just for you, Lori Gill. Look what's behind Mr. Mark Zuckerberg as he's smoking those meats. By the way, he's got that's on the left. That's the big green egg. On the right is my new Traeger grill.
That's great.
Yeah. You can't hear him, though. But is he turned up?
Oh. Oh, wait. I got the wrong fader.
He had the wrong fader. Let's do it again.
Everyone, we are live from my backyard where I am smoking these meats. Like
thank you, Laurie.
I'm making meats.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you. Yeah, if I smoke meat, that's what I'm talking about.
We do Back Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1700 UTC. Watch live at twit.tv/live. Download the file if you miss it live, twit.tv/MBW. We're all smoking.
It takes a long time.
And of course, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. I'll be smoking meat as soon as my Traeger arrives. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time. Now back to work or smoking your meat. Because break time is over.
Hey, folks, I'm Micah Sargent, host of Hands on iOS right here on the Twit Network. If you've got iOS devices or watchOS devices or tvOS device, any kind of Apple mobile device, you are going to want to check out Hands on iOS. It is the best way to make the most of those devices. I walk through tips, tricks, and everything in between, plus answer your questions. So be sure to check it out. It's twit.tv/HOI.